You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you had a great weekend. And I've got some good news for you. There is a brand new season of The Bachelorette. This is the 18th season of the show. And you know what? I think this might be the best Bachelorette because I think she's normal. Listen, I know you just put your car in park. I know that you just spit out whatever drink you had. I'm telling you she's normal, and here's why. She's a teacher. She's a teacher who asked the ABC producers, once they named her, probably before they named her The Bachelorette, can you move the filming? I know like you've got a schedule and there's networks and there's advertisers and millions of dollars at stake here, but can you push the filming to the summer so I can go back and teach my kids in the fall? And they said yes. They said yes because I think she's actually like a normal person who wants to get married. So I'm excited for the season. She seems like a straight shooter. She's so beautiful. And that is premiering this week on Tuesday. Remind me of the first season of The Bachelorette, and I hope that you watched it too, with Trista and Ryan. Trista's last two finalists were Ryan, who's gorgeous and was a firefighter, and Charlie, who lived in Hermosa Beach. I mean, she hit it out of the ballpark with the last two. And at the time, my boyfriend, my now husband, lived in Hermosa Beach. I was basically like Dan and his roommate Travis's other roommate, you know, like I outstayed my welcome. But I tried so hard to run into Charlie in Hermosa Beach. I went to Sharky's. I was on the Strand all the time. I tried to meet him at the grocery store. I never saw him. If you know Charlie or you know his whereabouts, will you please let me know? Because I have been dying to talk to him for a very long time. That's the same season that they got the wedding spinoff. Do you guys remember? It was like a 2-hour special. Actually, it wasn't that, just that. We went with them to like the bachelorette party. And there was all this drama. You could tell that he was harboring some resentment still that she had had over the night with Charlie. And he wasn't able to work through it. And by the way, I did an interview with him, both of them. But I did one with Ryan later. And I loved him because he said, yeah, it's all these years later. And I'm still pissed that she was mulling the decision between myself and this other guy right up until the end. I was like, you know what? I appreciate that because I don't think I would have gotten over that easily either. So anyway, they have this wedding and they have this big time wedding planner, Mindy Weiss, come. And Trista said, listen, I love the color pink. And when I tell you she likes pink, it's like, remember Steel Magnolias? My colors are blush and bashful. Or Lisa Vanderpump, where it's like, she even wants a pink heart. It was like in that category. And Mindy had to talk her off the cliff. She was like, listen, it's one thing to like pink, but this is ridiculous. This is like an ad for Pepto-Bismol. And we just don't want to go there. In the end, it was a great wedding. And obviously, they're still married and they've got two beautiful kids. But that was a doozy of a wedding. So watch that. The Bachelorette, season 18, Tuesday. Must watch. Also must watch. Winter House on Bravo. Guys, I loved it. I loved it. It's like the real world meets Netflix's Friends from College. Which, by the way, if you haven't watched, you've got to watch it. This one, was great. You've got people from Summer House and Southern Charm, but then a bunch of people no one's ever seen before on TV. And they all actually have organic relationships. So it's unlike anything on the Bravo network right now. I really love it. And I think you're going to love it too. And then there are two other things I want you to check out. One is Found on Netflix. So this one is right up my alley. I know it's up yours too. So after DNA tests reveal them to be cousins, these three girls adopted by different American families traveled to China in hopes of meeting their birth parents. Yeah. That comes out on Wednesday. It's called Found and it's on Netflix. And then the other one, it's called 4 Hours at the Capitol and it's HBO. It's heartbreaking. It's a must watch. It's a lot to process, but you got to watch it. This is a documentary featuring never before seen footage and vivid firsthand accounts from lawmakers, staffers, police officers, protesters, and rioters who stormed the Capitol building where the electoral votes were being counted. It's a lot to watch. And most of you know that one of my best friend's husbands is a Capitol Hill cop. So we talked throughout that day. So it did feel like I was kind of revisiting that. It's pretty personal to me, this one, but such an important story to tell. And that one is on HBO and it's on Wednesday as well. So The Bachelorette, Winter House, Found, 4 Hours at the Capitol. That is a great way to start your week. This episode is so great. My friend Dave Quinn wrote the oral history of The Real Housewives. So if you love The Real Housewives, this is going to be the greatest hour. You're just totally going to dive deep into it. If you have never watched Real Housewives, you are going to love this too, because we're giving you insight into why each franchise is so great and a little bit of the backstory. So once you start watching them, or if you want to start watching them, you kind of have a little bit more context. So we're going to go through some of the greatest moments of the book. This is a must get. It's 500 pages, you guys, and it's on Amazon. You've got to order it right now. I think that you are going to so love this next hour. So here is my guest, Dave Quinn. Dave Quinn is one of my dearest. One of my dearest. You know how you have those friends that you can text at like 11 o'clock at night? I can do that. And let me tell you why that's crazy. Because he's on the East Coast, I'm on a Pacific time. And I can text him about stupid things, things on TV, whatever it is. He's such a great buddy of mine, and I'm so happy for him because he wrote this spectacular book that you guys are going to go bananas for. It's called Not All Diamonds and Rosé, and is, guess this, the definitive oral history of The Real Housewives. I don't think that there will be another book this year that you're going to want more for the holidays than this one. And it is written by such a great guy. And listen, we live in the same vortex where we're doing interviews all the time. And he's one of my friends that I love to chat about these shows with because we both kind of look at them like cultural anthropologists. And we have been privy to scenarios off screen too and can tell you that a lot of these women are just, you know, normal people who just happen to be on TV. So welcome to the show.
Oh my gosh, Kate, I'm so happy to be here. You know, I am a longtime listener, a longtime fan first, like just like with Housewives, I'm a fan of Kate Casey first. Aww. And I'm thrilled that we've been able to build a friendship over the years. I remember when you first invited me on your show to talk about Survivor. And yeah. About, I think it was Zeke's outing. And that was like yeah. Such an incredible conversation we had. At the time, I was just a wee little reporter working for People magazine. I love that we've built such a close bond over Clubhouse. We spent a lot of time talking yeah. together on Clubhouse. And to be here as a guest on your show for a full hour, I'm dead.
This is just the greatest. And I text you and said, I am jumping out of my skin because this is such a great book. This is such a great tuck away into a corner book read, especially for people like you and me who have been watching the show from the first day. So we are like old timers. I wrote recaps way before I had a podcast. And so this has been really fun to go through and read. And I'm wondering if you think the way I do, as you did this, Did you revisit the way that you perceive certain women now that you've gotten a little bit older? Like your view of them has maybe shifted a bit based on your own life experiences.
Oh, 150%. I mean, you know that I have always been somebody who really tries to look at everybody for who they are and recognize, you know, non-judgmental. They make choices that may be different than mine. I try to be very generous and I try to be very compassionate, but it's very different when you go back. And I felt this in no, a perfect example of how I felt this would be with Joe De La Rosa. Like the fact that I sit here at 38 years old and I was 39 years old rather, and I was looking back and being like, she was 24. That didn't resonate with me when I was watching it for the first time and watching every scene and talking to her about like the actions of a 24-year-old. It's just, I have such different views towards her.
Also, that happened for her before Instagram. So yes. Then you think about how that experience would have been different had that been filmed, you know, 4 years ago versus in 2005. Let's start with Real Housewives of Orange County, which, you know, was our first dip into the Olympic pool of Real Housewives. Scott Dunlap, who created the series, meets Gina Keough in 1986 when he moves to Kodo. She comes over in a white jumpsuit. And that is the first housewife that he meets. And the premise of the show is like, this insane gated community has 5,000 homes, 15,000 people that live here. And it's this weird, really a vortex where it was wealthy, very conservative white people. And he took it to the network and they took it. And the first season was a little bit, you know, kind of creaky, but it really set the tone for peeking into the window of a world that we were not privy to. And so there began casting a group of women that personified the Kodo experience. So we start with Gina Keough, and then we start to build out from that. What do you think made that first season so different than the others, besides the fact they were all white women?
Well, you forget about the fact that reality television didn't really have this style of TV, right? There was a lot of, obviously, Survivor and those shows had been very focused on competition reality, and that was a growing field in the market. And they were also aware of the real world, which kind of started the whole reality world. But those were people in a house watching them all the time. This was like a different thing. You know, celeb reality had become popular. So we had seen The Surreal Life, and we had seen some of these, the Osbournes, right? The celebrities having reality shows. But these were just regular, everyday women. And Bravo really did such an incredible job, and we talk about this a lot in the book, of creating the format of what it felt like, of what it meant, of building what they often call the Bravo wink, the way that they add humor into each episode and how it's, you know, structured in such a way that has ebbs and flows with drama. I mean, they did an incredible job. When you look back at that first season, it's very different than what the housewives look like today, but you can see all the incredible nuggets there. And that is all, you know, Sherry Levine and Dave Ruppel, I know, who was instrumental in the early season. And of course, Scott Dunlap, all the work that they did, the vision that they had to how to create this into like a living soap opera. Those early conversations, that part in the book could have been its own book. It was just so good.
I thought so too. I was really taken by the Orange County part. Kimberly Bryant was really eager to do the show, which is interesting because she then really seemed to hate being part of the show and was eager to get off the show. Was that a surprise to you?
Very much so. And I tried so hard to track down Kimberly Bryant. She was one of my white whales. Could not find her. Finally connected. She wanted nothing to do with this. She doesn't appreciate her time on the series. And that's fine. I think that, you know, a lot of people feel that way. But yeah, she was one of the most outspoken women on the show that first season. And I, you know, will always hold her in a very treasured place because she is one of the original Real Housewives ever.
She reminds me of Vicky in the way that I do think living here in Orange County, I think a lot of women that are outsiders, and I say this as an outsider, they come here and they think that they have to look a certain way to fit into the mold, because I always say the cultural difference between here and back east is that I think that East Coasters try to set the trend, where people in Southern California have this paranoia about not following the trend. Mm-hmm. So Vicky was this Midwestern woman who comes to Orange County and then has to get the hair extensions and the French tips and then all the injections. And I wondered if Kimberly moved back to Chicago and looked at the version that she was in that first season and didn't see herself anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of women, I think, come here and they think, well, I have to be part of the trend. And it could be very easy, I think, for some women to get caught up in it. You know, I think a lot of women that are on the Orange County show sometimes get swept up in it. But just like the rest of the world, what makes you most interesting is your individuality. But this is a place where it can really consume someone looking the part. And she says something about like 85% of the women who live here have breast implants. And then Gina says, I actually thought the number was higher. So that can only make you realize, like, and when Côte d'Ivoire really is out, it's inland. Whereas they would do the sweeping scenes in the beginning and make you believe that the women were living right on the coast. But it really is this very odd, weird world. It's almost like Wild Wild Country, that docuseries about the cold in Oregon, where it's like way off. It is almost like that. I thought about that too as I read what you had said about Kimberly. Like, I wonder if she went back to Chicago and was like, I cannot believe my bulbous breast implants were that on display. And like, why was my hair so long and why all of that? But to her credit, I think it is hard for a lot of women who come here.
Yeah, and she left and it knows she was having some health issues. Her son had a big health scare. She had been a skin cancer survivor, and I believe he had a skin cancer scare. And I understand, like, the California sunshine, maybe not the best place to be. But it's interesting how she left and Vicky stayed. And Vicky morphed into, you know, and is still kind of, I think, holding on tight to what the, you know, California, Orange County view is.
Correct. Yeah, I agree. Also, another interesting thing was the way that you were able to get them to open up about their interest in joining the show and what it was like in the beginning. So Scott was taken by Gina because even when the kids were little, Gina was the kind of parent that was, they were latchkey kids. And so Slade would just like show up at his house and ask for something to eat. And as you see the seasons go on, you see that never changed. Her parenting style was very much like, you're on your own. Mm-hmm. And that was encapsulated when you see the differences between the way Vicky and Gina had graduations for their kids. It was like Slade, even though they had all this hope in him for him to become this baseball standout, it was like an afterthought. The graduation where Vicky was hosting like hundreds of people in the backyard. And I think what I like about that show, especially I appreciate as I get older, because I started watching the show before I had children.
And now you have like 25.
Is that once you have kids, you can have a relationship with someone, but then when you see them parent, it sometimes changes the way you look at them. Mm. Like, you love them, but you hate their kids. Or conversely, you could love your children's kids, but you hate the parents. And now that I have kids and I look at the way they parent, it makes me look at them in a different way as well. And it also, the wonderful thing about The Real Housewives is that you get the opportunity, unlike scripted, where you just see a one-dimensional character, like this is who they are. But on Housewives, with like Gina, it says so much about who she was when you met her husband, who was this former baseball player, and figuring out that he had this brain injury. And that the moment when her daughter's in the car and she breaks something, we'll just buy you a new one. All of those little moments are like little puzzle pieces. So you're kind of figuring out who this person is, how they belong in that community. And then for the viewer, who they are when they get triggered by certain cast members, like why do they react a certain way? It's because it reminds them of somebody in their own life. Or so it's like watching an episode is always, there's so many layers to it and not just the layers of the actual cast member.
Right. You're exactly right. And I thought that exploring that throughout the book was so exciting. The opportunity to talk to these women about what it was like to parent on television and how the effect of what viewers felt their parenting styles were like had on them and their kids. You know, I reached out to Brianna and Michael as well. I wanted to speak to all the kids. I spoke to some of them talking about the effects that, you know, the heaviness of being on TV. I think Lynn Curtin's daughters were really affected in a negative light based on being in the room the day that production came when they were evicted. And that was really hard for them. They certainly have struggled in the aftermath of it, but I cannot imagine what it would be like to be on these TV shows and have anybody judge anything about you, let alone your parenting style. That must be really difficult.
Right. And especially if you have a spouse that is not on board. Like Matt Keough was just not on board. He wasn't helpful. So I think about the stress that Gina must have been under to cover for his medical issues and to protect her children while also showing her life. And, you know, the job of the cast member is to really crack open their life. So it is interesting to kind of go back. And also just a timestamp in history, like the way they dressed and the way the cars they drove and the things that the conversations are so different than 2021, 2022, that it is just wild to go back and to watch. Still to this day, now, Michael is my favorite child.
Oh, he's incredible. Now, wait, let me ask you. Were you living in Orange County at the time?
I just moved to Orange County and I was at this Greek restaurant and I opened the city paper that was there. And I read this article about this new show called The Real Housewives of Orange County. And in it, the reporter like broke the fourth wall basically and said that a woman by the name of Vicky Gumbelson was trying to control the interview and tell each woman what they should say. And that was like our local Orange County paper. So yeah, it was
the Orange County Courier.
Yeah. And I was an outsider. So moving there. And so it was just fascinating to watch because a part of me was like, oh, is this what I have to look forward to? But just like you, I love reality.
Did you have sky tops?
I didn't wear sky tops, but Lynn Curtin told me that they wore them because the sky top founder had a factory and just gave them all away. But I do feel like there is a sky top ishness that still exists here. I just saw prom pictures or homecoming pictures, and like a lot of the kids that are around here are wearing like big fat cutout dresses, and it's just like a wild style here. My niece goes to college in LA now, and she's like, "What are people wearing here?" Wild.
I talked to all the women about sky tops. I asked every single one of them. I think Lynn Curtin said that she made some jewelry out of her sky tops, which made me laugh. I hope that somebody has one in a trunk somewhere and they need to send it to Bravo so they can display it at the Real Housewives Museum that they do at BravoCon, because it's such an iconic piece of clothing. They can make some money off it.
Oh, I believe that. Slade Smiley wanted to be on this show so bad. So bad. Yes. I was shocked that Andy says in the book that he had some feelings while watching those two. Were you shocked by that?
I was shocked by that too, but Andy really owned... I think he loves couples and the dynamic between them. He talks a lot in the book about his love for Simon and Alex from The Real Housewives in New York City and Michael and Ashley from The Real Housewives of Potomac. Like, he loves a good relationship between, like, seeing a weird dynamic between
husbands.
Weird is not the right word, but you know what I mean, like unique.
Off the beaten path. I mean, when he whipped out that American Express black card and was braggadocious, which, by the way, is a very Orange County thing to do. It's the like, you could have a jalopy outside in the parking lot, but you want to tell everybody you have an American Express card. That I think those were the moments that were so unique, because you're like, where in the world does somebody like that exist? This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmermann dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KKC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KKC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KKC. I wanted to talk about a couple of people that they cast for the show.
Yeah.
So, well, obviously, Vicky was just like so wild. I was surprised to hear a lot of people didn't like Quinn. A lot of the other cast members didn't like her.
I was surprised by that too. But, you know, she came in and we talk about this in the book that like, The cougars were very popular in the lexicon of the cultural zeitgeist, and the production was interested in finding a cougar, and they kind of filmed her away from the rest of the women. And then when they brought her in, it was like, here's our cougar. And the women felt like she was making fun of them. So right. They were all like really not into her. Now they all have built friendships. I want to just say, I always loved Quinn because my last name is Quinn. So obviously I felt connected to her. The interview that I had with Quinn was one of my favorites. I think she's a wonderful woman. She has an amazingly talented son named Colin. Mm-hmm. You should look him up. He's a great musician. She talked very openly with me about, which these are some of the stories that we didn't get in, but she talked very openly with me about how she was struggling. Colin is an out gay man and she didn't mm-hmm. necessarily know how to deal with that. There's so many stories that I think could have lasted, but she came on the same season as Tamara. And Tamara really was the first housewife to have opinions about other housewives and mm-hmm. took off running. So I love Quinn.
Well, and they say that Tamara really changed the trajectory of the show because she came in and had different opinions, but also brought information from outsiders of the show, which we can get to in a second. But the crack up for me was first learning, I didn't know this, Simon was the son of a Greek diplomat. Like, what? I mean,
I didn't know either.
They make it sound like such a big deal that he worked at Fletcher Motors, and which is like a big dealership here. But the way that he was so uptight, you would have thought that he worked at a Fortune 500 company, but he just worked at a car dealership. But she was sort of like, you know, painted as this trashier woman with a son from a previous marriage, and she would, you know, would wear like bikini tops and she had breast implants and he's, you know, the son of this Greek diplomat. But I mean, those two should have never, thank God they did because they had great, you know, beautiful kids, but they were never going to make it last through the long. And this seemingly would be a disaster for TV. But the weirdest part was you pointed out that Simon kind of liked her being on the show. So it was weird because he was embarrassed by her being on the show, but then like the attention that came from it. It was weird.
Yeah, I think he liked it in the beginning. And then when people started having strong opinions about him and when he saw his wife react to the fame, I think that kind of changed his perspective. You know, there's something we talk about in the book is the housewife's curse, the divorce curse. And that if you're on the show, you're going to get divorced. And it's funny, the women who have gotten divorced on the show even open up about the fact that I don't think the show is to blame for my divorce at all. I think that we were bound to get there mm-hmm. anyway. It just kind of accelerated things. So then you start seeing women coming on the show almost like, I know I'm in a bad relationship. I hope I get on the other side of this soon.
Yeah.
And this show can help me. And I think you and I can name probably countless housewives who probably entered the show in bad relationships, mm-hmm. knowing that they didn't want to be in that relationship forever.
Or they sometimes will say, well, I thought he would see what a terrible husband he was on TV. It's like, it's not going to work out that way. Men are not going to like watch it back and think, you know what, Loretta, I really fucked up. Like, let's make this work. Yeah.
No. Shannon says that in the book. She hoped that David would see watching back some of the things and change, but you can't do that way. It doesn't work. Yeah.
Two big things that happen on this show that I want to talk about, because you go into detail and it's so, so great. Okay. The first one is the real background on why Gretchen and Tamara hated each other so much. So you said that, they say in the book that, that Tamara says that she was out, she sees Gretchen and they're not filming. And she confesses to her, listen, I met Jeff, we dated on and off and it wasn't a great relationship. We were broken up and then got back together. Had I known he was going to get leukemia and I'd have to be his caretaker, I would have left a long time ago. So she has that information. And then she watches her do all these scenes where she's this loving fiance. And to have to be fueled with that information and still be trying to film a show where you're trying to really reveal who you are as a person, what's going on in your life, that must be extraordinarily difficult. Not just in that situation, but for other franchises, when these women are privy to information about a cast member and they're not being authentic on camera. How much is that? Does that play into the dynamics on screen, those things that happen off screen?
Oh, hugely, hugely. I think Carol Raswell said it to me in the midst of an interview that I was having with her for the book. She said, a lot of the fights that you see on screen have to do with the show itself. Mm. And the show is like a major factor. And this is exactly what we're really talking about, right? Is that in this moment, according to Tamara, she had this information about the real Gretchen. I don't know whether it's true or not. I'm not here to be judge and jury. That's what she felt. And then what she was watching was Gretchen performing in a way that was inauthentic. And she was saying, listen, I'm here showing everything about myself. Why are you pretending to be something you're not? And again, that's where the show plays in, right? Like you're going to show off as something different. This is the same exact argument that you can say about Monique and Candace, because things that happened off screen between the two of them comes into play during their fight. How many years later, right? Of you're presenting yourself, you're trying to drag me for the fans, whatever it could be, right? Mm-hmm. So it is a recurring theme all throughout the show. A lot of the major fall aparts, Candy and Phaedra, Bethany and Carol, a lot of it has to do with this exact thing. Things that happened off camera that clamor into the show.
Another example of that is Heather. When Heather was privy to information about David having a mistress, how did that play out on TV?
Now, in this case, it's so interesting because Heather technically doesn't say anything on television about it, but she's talking about it behind the scenes. And what happens is that a friend of hers, she's telling some people behind the scenes about it, gossip that she heard off camera. And one of those people allegedly knows David's mistress, calls David, and then calls Shannon, who is in the midst of filming a conversation that she's having with Tamara. So it's like this chain reaction happens unbeknownst to everyone. I mean, again, I say this over and over and over again. People believe this show is scripted. You cannot script this stuff. You cannot script it. There is no script being handed to anyone. And I thought that was really interesting. In this case, Heather did not bring this up on the show. She did not try to expose Shannon. She tried to protect Shannon, but still conversations happening behind the scenes crept their way onto the show. And I think is, you know, one of the biggest reasons the two of them had that fallout that season.
Well, also, people are prone to blame another person. They don't want to believe that their spouse have committed adultery. So, of course, she's going to blame Heather for it. But that scene where Heather asked her to leave her house, I mean, you can just feel the tension watching it. But you're seeing someone's life unraveling on camera. And I think, you know, as we go back and look at it, we probably have a little bit more empathy, especially we know that in the end, it was better for them not to be together. But wow, what an extraordinary scene that they captured on television.
Yeah. And again, I mean, I would say to you, Kate, that I'm learning this in my own personal life right now. I've gone through writing this book process was very difficult. And I went through a lot of loss, about three major losses in a row that kind of rocked me. And you start saying to yourself, you know, what did I do to deserve this? Or how is this happening? And then you start to realize that things don't happen to you, they happen for you. Mm-hmm. And in this case, like, I think what happened to Shannon was for her and for the greater good. And we have really watched her. I think she's an incredible housewife because of the fact that she's lived all of this out loud and she's shown it all, good, bad, and ugly. And now we're really learning that she is where she is right now.
Where she's supposed to be.
Yeah, that this happened for her. It's like opened up the doors for her to be in a really happy relationship right now.
It makes you wonder how some of them would have lived these experiences off camera.
Yeah.
Would you cut the cord quicker? Would you have been as bombastic in your reaction? All those things, which we'll never know because they happen to do it, you know, on camera.
But that's why, Kate, that's why I say they're all so brave. I mean, again, yeah. You and I know a lot of these people personally. I am 9 years sober this November. I would never have gotten sober on television. Right. The fact that Bronwyn Wyndham Burke did that for everyone to see and came out and, you know, said, I don't know what my marriage is going to look like, but I don't want to leave this guy. And I still love him and I love my kids and I'm figuring it all out. And did that in the court of public opinion.
Right.
That's incredible. That's so brave. And I give them all such credit for doing that.
So a couple more additions to Orange County. Kelly Dodd, the big Kelly Dodd moment that is well documented in the book and unforgettable is that infamous trip to Ireland and how
yes.
She was really new to the show and how there was a series of events that happened on a bus. Tell everybody about that one.
Oh my goodness. I mean, again, people think that this is all so scripted. You cannot script this. At the end of the trip, what I have learned, and again, all these shows have different production companies, so I know that this just happens with Orange County. I don't know if the same thing happens in the other cities. But apparently, according to the women, they have a tradition that once they're finished filming, they all spend the night, you know, at the bar with the crew and really like bonding as a group. So that was happening and things were happening behind the scenes yet again. And we cover it all where the women were all partying together and Kelly felt left out. I think maybe she went down or she was asked not to. I'm not really sure. And it all spilled over to like them in the hallway getting into an argument at like, we're talking at like 4 a.m, right? 5 a.m. And they, you know, went out and partied up until getting into the van. And a producer smart enough to turn the camera on and film what was happening because it was real and it was raw. And it was like, you know, conflict that we had been following throughout the whole trip. I mean, incredible television, incredible TV.
So another thing that some of those fights are so below the belt and they carry from series like season to season. What do you think of Orange County has been the dirtiest fight? Because I feel like they've had some dirty ones.
Ooh.
Because in that scene where Kelly says to Shannon, you know, you have hair on your face. I feel like women across the world watch that and they're like, oh my God, I need to go get my face waxed.
Yeah, I mean that and even saying to Shannon, keep eating, like those are
horrible.
Those are really yeah. horrible below the belt things. But it's funny, like Kelly was championed for that, right? People like loved the bad behavior in those conflicts, in that drama. So it's hard for me to be kind of judge and jury about it. I mean, yeah. again, throwing a glass of wine in somebody's face, that's pretty bad when Tamara did that to Gina. Maybe that's mm-hmm. the worst. But again, like I am the sort of person is if you threw wine in my face, I would say, I'm sorry. I don't know what I did.
We have no idea how we would react. It's easy for
us. The
like,
worst.
How
so
would
sorry.
We have no idea? But also yeah. the fact that Gina and Tamara still fight about the sequence of events that led up to that is still crazy to me that all these years later. One thing I texted this to you right away. I was like, wait, what? Peggy Salahian saying that the show had for years been trying to get her to be on the show, which I don't know if I believe that was true, but this line just shocked me. I'm very careful with them, referring to her children, putting them on the show. I'm very careful with them and kept them a secret just in case of kidnapping. So what is she talking? She kept her three children secret from people in case they were going to be. But then it's like people say things like that and you go, well, you are made for TV, because it seems like the archetype is like there has to be an element where you are so over the top and not self-aware and say things that if you met somebody like that at a preschool function, you'd go, yeah, they need to be on TV because they're not like the rest of us.
Right. Unfiltered, a complete lack of self-awareness to some extent. You know, producers are asking you to live your life completely out loud. They're asking you to accelerate your life in a way, right? Because they're saying, we're going to be shooting for 6 months and we need you to film a year's worth of life in 6 months. So like, you know, pack it in. There's a lot of things that are happening. And I think that that's, again, it's why I admire them all. Right. That was a crazy thing. Of course, the second Peggy said that to me out loud, I was like, ding, I have to put that in. That's, what are you talking about? But also like, okay, maybe that was a real feeling that you had. And I've never thought about that as a single dude without children. So, okay, maybe, you know, that's a different story. And I don't know. I laughed a lot at it and I laugh a lot at it all, but you want someone who is completely unfiltered like that. It's why I constantly praise Candace Tiller-Bassett. I may not agree with everything that she says, but I love that she doesn't filter herself. You know, I love that Lisa Rinna, everybody may think that she's, you know, a certain way or chastise her for holding people accountable to truth. But I'm like, at least she's doing it. Like I would never say these things. They want you to say out loud everything you think about another person. I would never say that because I wouldn't want anyone to say it to me.
But also to your point, this is why Lydia McLaughlin, while a lovely person, and I've met her, lovely, she's not made for the show because you have to have thick skin, but you have to be able to be vulnerable. And my issue with her has always been that she wasn't right for the show because her life was always rosy and happy and full of sparkles. And the truth is, not everybody's life is perfect. Like, I want to see the layer of you that's like, this is something I'm really struggling with. And there was something missing there. So when they brought her back, I was shocked. But as you explain in the book, there was an element of the show had become so dark that they wanted someone who could kind of bring Vicky and Tamara and Shannon together. So it served the purpose in the producer's mind for a moment, but I just never understood. I just didn't think she'd be probably fine on something else, but that show was probably not right for her.
Yeah. And she'll say the same thing.
Yeah.
I think she'll say the same thing, but it's often something I say when housewives don't return to the show and they may feel a certain way about it. I'm always like, you know, it's kind of a good thing. Like,
exactly.
Kind of saying maybe to yourself, like, this isn't the right fit for you. And maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah. Okay. We cannot stop talking about Real Housewives of Orange County. The last one thing we have to talk about is the Brooks and the cancer story, which is absolutely bonkers. And it's, by the way, you guys, it's great to read back through it because it takes you right back to watching every episode where you're screaming at the wall. Like, how did this happen? What was the wildest thing that you learned by reading about that? And tell everybody, if they're not familiar with this story, just like, you know, give us like the snapshot of what happened.
Okay, so season 10 of The Real Housewives of Orange County, Vicky is dating a man named Brooks, and she reveals at the top of the season that he has, I believe, pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. And that he is going through chemo and this and that. And throughout the course of the season, we find out that he is producing false records and may actually not have cancer. Now, the answer still is up in the air. I don't know whether he had cancer or not. No one has shown me any documents that he did, or there's a lot of example that he didn't, but we don't know. He still claims that he did eventually, but he sat down with Andy Cohen at the end of the season, right, in that one-on-one, and admitted that he had falsified a lot of documents because he wanted the sympathy of Vicky's co-stars. And the question is, did Vicky know or did she not know? And that, I think, is the joy of reading that section. You know, I tried very hard not to just like reiterate every single thing that had happened, but that was one where it was the most surprising thing, to answer your question, for me, was that it was unraveling in real time, so that producers did not know any of this. We often think that the producers are behind the scenes and they've got it fully scripted and they're telling people what to say. That's not true. None of that is true. And in this case, the producers were completely shocked and against it. I think Bill Langworthy, who show ran that season, tells me very honestly, the last thing you want to do when you're running a show is hear words like oncology and, you know, and cancer. Like, that's not entertainment. What are we talking about? And unfortunately, it turned into compelling television, but they were along for the ride in and of themselves.
And Megan Edmonds really made a name for herself as a detective unlike any other. But it is really fun to read through to everyone's reaction, a story about Heather and Terry, and how Brooks had claimed that Terry had an IV bag in his trunk, and to hear Heather say, like, what doctor would have an IV bag in his trunk? Like, that's ridiculous. How he was claiming that the tannins from red wine were the reason that he was recovering. I mean, just to read it back, you're like, this guy, unbelievable. And he also got some free veneers out of the whole thing. So she has claimed, since then that she was taken for the ride also. She was not complicit. Obviously, the women still have questions about it. But that guy has just disappeared.
He has. And then Meghan King divorcing Jim Edmonds and now married to Joe Biden's nephew. So she's gone from Meghan King Edmonds to Meghan King Owens. I just cannot believe where that. I texted her the other day to congratulate her on her wedding and say, I guess I'll never speak to you again because you're very famous now. it's a level that I will never. It was lovely while it lasted.
Well, it's also come full circle because she's back to her Ireland roots. But yeah,
that's right.
That is the greatest section, is the one about Brooks and cancer. And that's like a must read. Also, Christy Swanson and Mariel Hemingway wanted to be on the show. Never would have worked. And that's where we come back to New York. Because in New York, there was a cast member who, while not an actress, looked at the opportunity to be a cast member as an actress. And that was Aviva Drescher.
Yes.
So first, let's go into the casting of New York, and then we'll go back to Aviva. New York was a fascinating new way of looking at being a housewife. It was supposed to be a show about Manhattan moms, and that's why you could understand how Jill Zarin and Simon and Alex would be in the same vortex, because the show was originally supposed to be about Manhattan moms, and Luann had thought, even throughout the beginning of the process, that was really about New York socialite kind of moms. So I was surprised to hear how some of the women came into the show, that Luann was at a bar with her nieces and Bobby Zarin bought them drinks. And she had a great time that night talking to Jill. And Jill kept a pink card, like a, you know, business card with her information. And that when this opportunity came out, that Jill remembered and still had that card and brought her to the producer's attention. Who was the most difficult person to cast for the show to get them on first season of Real Housewives of New York?
I mean, I think it sounded to me that they really struggled in the beginning to get Bethany on, like that. Yeah. Bethany was somebody that they were kind of against. And Andy was like, I don't know why we would want somebody who was on the Celebrity Apprentice or Apprentice Martha Stewart. Like, why would I want her on this show? He was kind of against it. He eats his hat in a few sections of the book. He also, some of the women really shade him in the book, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I've had a few calls about it. He mentioned it. I watched What Happens Live the other night about how the women really shade him, but he was very open to letting every opinion live in that book. So even if he disagreed with their views, he wanted the view included.
That's great. I appreciated that. So, you know, it was just such a great show. Just a look at into the societal world, the way that kind of people at that income level operate. Simon and Alex, of course, were just this odd couple that seemed incredibly codependent. They were the precursor for Dorit and PK, really, who are admittedly also codependent. I wanted to know if you could walk us through the relationship between Bethany and Jill and ultimately how their friendship ended.
I mean, I think that is, if you were going to ask me any friendship fallout across the franchise that hurt the most, for me, it was Jill and Bethany. You know, these are two people who really became friends on the show. They had instant chemistry. They both have that New York energy for me, that like gab, that the gift of gab. Jill, of course, the great connector, always wanting people to be included and involved and bringing worlds together. So this all kind of plays into it, right? And I think that Jill and Bethany were such a dynamic duo that in Jill's perspective, when they hit a bit of a rough patch in their relationship, that it was so strong, their bond, that she never thought that it would ever fall apart. Mm. And I think Bethany, because of her background and the experience that she's been in with her father and whatnot, she speaks very openly about this, you know, just approached it in a different way. It was much more of a betrayal. I certainly have abandonment issues, so I struggle with this sometimes too. And I think that her wall went up, and Jill, when she was finally ready to fix things, Bethany wasn't. And I mean, can't you remember Bethany in that red dress crying? I mean, it's just so iconic. So that for me, I think, was such a powerful thing. And Andy, again, talks about in the book about how he was really worried about that and the fallout from that, from the fans' perspective, how it affected Jill, how it changed the trajectory of the show, how Bethany's spinoff was playing into all of this is explored in the pages of this book. And I think you'll love reading it if you're a fan of the show.
And also, Andy does say in the book, every single cast member wants a spinoff. And so now you've got the other layer of some of them, and for every franchise, they've had spinoffs. And how does that play into the dynamics of the women as a group, but also talk to me about the individual egos? Because in the book, it seems like Jill has at times had an ego that supersedes reality.
Well, she owns
and
up
she would
to that.
Say that too. I'm not saying anything out of turn. She would say it too.
No, I think, and that Jill Zarin was one of my favorite interviews because she really came at this with such great perspective and rawness and realness. And she was like, am I a jealous person? Yes. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's great. That's, you know what I mean? Like, because yes, we are human. And sometimes I'm jealous and sometimes you're jealous. And it's just, you have to fight that emotion. And she, again, lives out loud, and she lived out loud and made bad choices. And, but yeah, I mean, I think there's a natural, healthy ego to everyone on these shows. And which is, of course, you would have if you were on television too. And some of them get the best. I try to remind housewives when I first meet them, when they're first starting, I try to get to them as quick as I can. And I repeat a few things to them. One of the things I say to them is that this is a marathon, not a sprint. Mm. So you have to be able to do multiple years on the show. If that's a trajectory you want, you can't just throw it all out all at once. You can't reveal everything about yourself. You can't fight dirty. You can't, get into conflict dirty. You can't deal with this drama right away. You have to let things change and grow. I sometimes hear housewives say, I will never work with her again. And I'm like,
tough.
That's a kiss of death. You can't do that. Like, this is a marathon. And I also tell them to ignore all the bad things people say about them on the internet, and to ignore all the good things people say about them on the internet. You know, the internet didn't cast them on this show, and they have to just live with themselves and be confident enough in themselves to know that they can continue on. It's challenging.
But then again, the reason they're on the show is that there's a part of their personality that craves attention and spotlight in a way that other people don't. So that they're at war with that all the time.
Yeah.
It's like how to keep your ego in check and not let the fame become a drug that overtakes your sense of reality and what is appropriate and what is normal.
And there are multiple housewives who have told me that the show is a drug for them.
Right.
And I think Vicky Gumbelson is very honest about that. We both know Bronwyn has talked about, you know, that she had an addiction to alcohol and then an addiction to fame that she needed to address and work through. Of course. I mean, listen, again, if the world was telling me how great I am, if I was on television on an incredible network, maybe I would struggle with that too. But a lot of people don't put themselves in their shoes. And that's what I hope when you finish Not All Diamonds and Rosé, you are thinking about how they go through things in a way that maybe you hadn't before.
I think so. Absolutely. Talk to me about Kelly, Ben Simone, and Bethany in the moment. I'm here, you're there.
I mean, it's such incredible television and an iconic moment that I will never forget.
Very iconic.
Very iconic. And that is just, again, a friendship that these two women probably have more in common than they even think they do. And it was just small little things. Kelly was very offended by Bethany saying, "Who is this Madonna?" And she felt like she was getting an energy from Bethany that was much more aggressive, where Kelly was like trying to just be the nice girl that everyone loves. And, you know, these things kind of hit each other on both sides. But I mean, it all came to a blow there. And then, of course, carries over to Scary Island. And I think the recounts of those scenes, those moments from Housewives history are really incredible.
I also think people could identify when Bethany said, you know, "I met her at a party before we started filming and she acts like she has no idea who I am." So it's like Right. Moments like that where even though we're on a TV show and they're in another city and they have a different income level or they have a different job than you, like it's the small moments like that where you go, yeah, that sounds like somebody I know in town that drives me crazy. So that's why I think people continue to go back because it reminds them of something in their own life. Let's talk about the infamous trip to Scary Island.
Oh, goodness.
That is like that, that goes on for pages. And oh my God, I had to walk away and come back because I didn't want it to end.
Yeah, it was so good. I mean, all of these things, Kate, I talked to 185 people for this book. I did over 500 hours of interviews. There was so much material. And again, there's so much in here. I will remind people, this is like the thickest book. It looks like a Bible.
It's like
so
War and
heavy.
Peace. It's War and
it
Peace.
It really is like War and Peace. That should have been the working title.
War and Peace, The Real Housewives.
The Real Housewives. but you know, I loved that. I loved the perspective of it and how what was happening behind the scenes and how they were filming it all at the same time. We forget. We all think about that that argument at dinner in which Bethany says to Kelly, like, go to sleep, right? We all think about that. But let's not forget, that was turtle time. That was Sonia, you know, their boat crashing. Sonia and Kelly having a conversation in the boat too. Like, all these things were happening at once. And the folks who were, I think it was Matt Anderson and Nate Green, who were working on that, were like running around. They were like, so much had happened all at once. And then this is another thing that I have begged for her. Maybe your readers can help get it out of her. But Jill Zarin runs into Kelly Ben Simone at the airport. Kelly is leaving.
Right.
Jill is arriving. And Jill has a picture of two of them.
She claims she has a picture of them. Yeah.
She promises she'll never show it.
I don't get that.
I don't know. I don't know, but I want this picture so badly. I tried. There's some photos in the book and I really had hoped that we would run that one, but she is holding on tight to it. So go to Jill and Allie right now, buy some masks, some merch, and then beg for her
to release the photo. Sell it. It'd go crazy. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
I mentioned Aviva. Now, Aviva, on paper, you're like, of course you hire her. She's amazing. But then we find out that Aviva had been watching the show and was a super fan and really looked at this like as an opportunity to be an actress. And she would kind of plot scenes. And I think that she represents the mistake that some women make where they think, I'm going to come onto the show and be a character. And that's gets the others so frustrated because you're really just supposed to live out your life on camera. To the point where Andy says that Reed, her husband, called before the season finale even aired on her first season to try to negotiate her second season. I was like, what? That is insane.
Yeah. I mean, she really had a very different attitude towards this show. She really thought of it in a totally different way than other housewives had in the past. And I think it didn't work out for her in the long run. Or consequently, you can say it did work out for me in the long run. I had one of the most iconic moments in all Housewives history when she threw that leg. It really, you know, we all remember it. So maybe it was a good idea for her. I mean, she's living a very happy life. She's still in that marriage. Her and Reed are in great place. She, you know, is still a working mom and she's doing well for herself. Maybe this was the right choice for her. But she's not the only one. Amber Marchese in New Jersey also talks about coming onto the show. Yeah, this was an acting gig for her. And those people who try to put on a performance typically never last very long.
Yeah, no. I wanted to just skip through the Amber and Jim part because I just thought, oh, I can't even deal with those two. All right, last of the New York, we have to talk about Tom. Now, the part where in the book where you say one of the housewives, maybe it was Sonia or Ramona that said, Bethany is so good at what she does that she purposely took a skinny girl margarita bottle and drank it after revealing the information that Tom had been with another woman. And I remember that moment, as we all do, of her like shaking as she raised it to her lips. And it was like, by the end of that season, we're like, oh, here we go again. Big Ben Parliament. Here's another skinny girl ad. But it was nice to like read through that and to see and to hear, to read that the other women were just as frustrated as the viewers were. And that's like kind of a nice treat of the book too, is that you're in real time reading how they felt about many of these iconic moments. But you've got to talk to me about that moment and the whole Tom thing, the Tom debacle.
The Tom debacle. I mean, yeah, I love that these women had similar feelings towards that. We still don't know. There's a big question. Did Bethany set Tom up? Did she, you know, some people believe that that photo was something that she worked hard to kind of get,
I kind of hope she did because it was great TV.
I mean, either way, it was great TV. And that's the whole thing. Like, I keep coming back to the idea. I do not really pick sides in these things. You know, you and I have had many discussions.
Yeah.
It is not my place to say whether somebody did something or didn't. And when I talk to these women, what they would say to me is they'd really convince me their side. And I would say, I completely understand how you feel. And then I would talk to, you know, the person on the other side and I would say, I completely understand how you feel. Like I do, I get it. So I don't know whether it was staged or not, but it was real good TV. Did she reach for that Skinny Girl bottle because she knew it would make it on camera? Maybe, but if
it worked,
if she did, it worked. We're all talking about it. We're all sending that gift to each other.
I know.
So
I know. It makes me want a margarita right now. All right, yeah. Atlanta. Oh my God, Atlanta. It's like you could do a whole book just on Atlanta, and I hope somebody does. Like that is like so much great stuff in that chapter too. Casting Atlanta. I love the backstories on it. The previous history between Sheree and Nene and Kim, the addition of Deshaun because she was this wealthy woman who could just write checks. Big Papa, very Big surprised Papa. To hear that he was a very small man in real life.
And that he allegedly filmed, that they like filmed yeah. the scene with him that never made it on air. I never knew that. That was a shock to me. There's so much great stuff. I keep reminding people that there is so much more to the Housewives than the, we all know the Nenes, we all know yeah. the Bethanys, but like somebody like Deshaun Snow had such an incredible
personal
story that I would have really loved to continue to explore. There's such great stuff in Atlanta.
Well, she's funny because she's like, no, I get it. I was totally boring. But
yeah,
like somebody you would love to know more about because as Carlos King told me, she was a great person to highlight because in Atlanta, you have extreme wealth and extremely successful Black entertainers and business people that work in business. And Deshaun and her husband were the kind of couple that could just write thousands and thousands of dollars worth of checks to charities. And they wanted to show that story, but she's just not a bombastic person. So to be juxtapositioned with Nene and Kim and Sheree, that would be pretty hard for someone. I mean, imagine all of us like in a room, like an Andy's, you know, baby shower, be like a little overwhelming. What is it about Nene, Kim, and Sheree that you think made that show such an incredible, incredible series?
I think it's what makes all Housewives shows work in the beginning is when they have real friendships and real history.
Yeah.
Sheree, Nene, and Kim knew each other for a long time. And there was resentments that they had towards one another that they had never spoken about. And then they were asked to speak about. I think those, the real friendships and the longevity is what I think viewers like to see. And it's when you think about all of the incredible Housewives moments throughout history, it all comes back to that for me. You know, you think about what happened in Jersey between Caroline and Teresa, or even Teresa and Melissa. That is all real. Family, that is real. When you look at what went down between Giselle and Karen for all these years, they've had like, they have a real friendship that for years has had issues that they are still working through. And it doesn't mean, you know, sometimes new women join the show and they right at first may not know everyone, but look at somebody like Jackie Goldschneider. She didn't really know anybody when she first joined. She had one connection. She meets all the women. And now four seasons in or however long, she's built real friendships. So now her and Margaret and Melissa and like there's real friendships that you can really explore. That's what we want to see. So I like when they give people the chance. And I think, I mean, that's why I watched the show.
Forgot that, first of all, it was a huge coup to get Candy on the show because she's like a true Atlanta personality. And that was like a big, big deal. And then I forgot that her fiance had passed away.
Oh, so
after
sad.
The first season. You totally forget that because Candy and a lot of these women have been on for seasons so long and they open up so much about their lives. Like that's a huge milestone experience that you forget about because Todd and the children that have come afterwards kind of, you know, have taken over the screen. But yeah, her fiance died. I forgot about that.
It's wild. And I have to say, I mean, I even looking back at this book after I got to the end of it, there are so many of those moments just like that that I like hadn't thought about in years that I loved re-exploring. And I'm hopeful that the readers have the same sort of experience.
Yeah.
Because look, we've been talking for an hour and we're just getting to Atlanta.
Oh my God.
We could be here for another 2 hours going through all of these shows. And I think that, you know, that's going to be the experience of reading it for people.
Okay, well then we have to do we're going to do a fast go through.
Okay.
And we're going to end with New Jersey and Beverly Hills. But DC, I love this. Lauren Zelazdik says, it was a pretty good season. It was going fine. And then honestly, we got grifted. They got grifted. And then Andy said, when the FBI subpoenas your raw tapes, you know you're not bringing the show back. That was such a bummer. I still think that was a great season because the fact that that all happened at the White House is unbelievable. New Jersey, this group of women who have these really deep ties. What is the net? Like, what happened between Teresa and Melissa? And can they ever really have a great relationship?
I don't know. I mean, I think that the two of them have learned to coexist with each other in a really, you know, in a way that's beneficial for their family. I think they'll never let go of those things. We saw in the trailer for Ultimate Girls Trip that they seem to still be fighting over the same thing. So, you know, that is always going to be there. But can't you relate to that? I mean, I certainly relate to having longstanding grudges with family members that don't go away anytime soon. Like, you know, it's real again. So I appreciate that so much.
Dina and Caroline. Will they ever make up?
I mean, I can hope so for their sake, but maybe not. I mean, they seem to both be very happy without the other in their lives. So.
Oh. Kenya Moore, a great addition to Atlanta. And it's nice that they all kind of say she's great TV. All of the cast members are like, she's great. So as much as she gets on our nerves and we're angry at her, she does bring something to the show that's essential.
She's great television. She really is an incredible housewife. She doesn't understand the assignment. She wrote the assignment.
Yeah, probably. Phaedra. She was unlike any other Atlanta housewife. Quiet, Southern, but the one-liners. I don't know.
Hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
It's hard to see who is the best one-liners, but Atlanta really had so many. Like NeNe, Lips Poppin'.
I mean, that you've talked to Carlos King before. You know that Carlos really talks about the fact that NeNe kind of adapted a lot of his sayings and a lot of his personalities.
And then we've got Kim Fields, which was a misstep because she didn't really understand the dynamics of the show. A lot of them are like that. Candy and Portia fighting. That was a huge story that you uncover in the book.
Yes, I love that, right?
Then we go into Beverly Hills. You guys are, I know everybody goes crazy for Beverly Hills. It's just pages and pages where he goes through why Camille was a great housewife, how she struggled with the backlash, the LVP clause, how people, those in the cast were forever annoyed by the way she set up scenes and ultimately why she probably left the show and wouldn't be a good fit today. The Kyle and Kim fight in the limo. Brandy adds a lot of context to the LVP fights. But the thing that I found the most fascinating was the way that you covered what happened to Taylor and Russell. And really nice to read about how all of the cast members really rallied around her and how they supported her. And it really diminishes a lot of the concerns that people had about how much production may or may not have or have not been involved. And so you really get a better picture of how this was an extraordinarily difficult story to tell and the series of events that happened and how they all really rallied and support her. And I think her story was so important for the viewing audience. And gosh, you just read that, you think, I hope she's okay today, but very brave of her to come forward. You go through Miami and why that show was interesting to watch and ultimately why it didn't work out. Dallas, you go into what did work and did not work the first season, the Leanne debacle. This I couldn't get over. Carrie Duber saying, I was the only person on the show with zero experience in any facet of entertainment, which is funny to me because I'm probably the best at reality TV out of all of them because I'm most myself and most entertaining. What? And then the rumor about Mark, how she met him while she was the nanny and how that actually was brought on by Brandy was very eye-opening. And then you end with Potomac. And you go through all the different women that have been cast, the Monique and Candace fight. My thing that I always thought was so interesting was someone pointing out that Ashley Darby did the show because she thinks it would be fun. So it's not because of money. It's not because of career. It's not because of anything. And that's why she's great, because she does scenes without thinking about the repercussions because there's not a real reason for her to be doing the show. And right. That makes me look at her in a totally and different way. But the best part about it is reading someone's comment and then the next person's comment dispels what they said. It's just, it's like so funny, line after line after line. I don't even know. Like, we could talk about this for 17 hours. What you guys need to know is you got to order it right now. In fact, if you can, go to the bookstore on Wednesday and go get it, because you're going to just sit by the window with a flashlight and like read the whole thing in one night. It's unbelievable.
But Kate, can I just tell you, like, what I love about your show, and this is something that I kind of mimic a little bit in the book, is you've always been so great about bringing on producers like Carlos Kane, like Alex Baskin, and having conversations with them that pull back the fourth wall. That's really what this is for viewers. And, you know, people keep asking, like, what is your favorite housewife interview you did for the book? Like, it really is those producers. And I'm so excited for, you know, your listeners, of course, know these voices, some of them, but I'm excited for Doug Ross and for Lucilla and for Lisa Shannon to become household names, for Matt Anderson and Nate Green, and people to know who they are because they had such an instrumental part in all of these things. And their perspectives, I think, are going to be the most fascinating for listeners or readers.
Nate Green was one of my first guests, actually.
Oh, wow.
Matt Anderson and Nate Green were one of my, like, I think it was like episode 5.
They're all incredible. Yeah. Those conversations were my favorite, hands down, talking to any producer. It was so eye-opening. And what I heard from a lot of them was really fun for them to go back through the process too, because, you know, they have different perspectives sometimes than the network and they have different perspectives than the women. And it's just, it's all in there. It is a book of feelings, not a book of facts. You'll be able to kind of figure out what you think is the right story through. And there aren't clean answers to some of these things. And some of the women are dying to know answers to things as well. So
that's for sure. It's such a good book. I'm so proud of you. I know how hard you worked. This is so freaking great. Everyone's going to love it.
I appreciate you so much.
Love you so much.
I love you. And again, I say all the time, like, you have been producing this podcast well over 400 episodes now. Congratulations again. You're doing it all by yourself. Which I think is so incredibly admirable. You do all your own booking. You're a woman working in this industry that oftentimes ignores women. So I just have so much respect for you, while being a busy mom of a brood of 5 kids.
Thank you.
I just bow down to you. Thank you so much for all you do towards this community, because as a fan first, I think it's incredible that they can come to you so often for your perspectives and your incredible interviews.
Well, right back at you, my friend. I can't wait to see you on the New York Times bestsellers list. You deserve it.
Your lips to God's ears. Let's hope for it. I'm hoping. Really.
You will. I'm not. I don't doubt it. Tell everybody where they can find you and where they can get the book.
So the book is available wherever books are sold. So you can get it there. And then you can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter. My handle is 9daves. It's the same, NineDaves. Sorry for the little slur. I'm wearing my Invisalign, as my dentist promised I would. And I'm also on Clubhouse. I am the founder of Club Bravo on Clubhouse. So if you're a Clubhouse listener or you use Clubhouse, come follow us. We do tons of rooms a week. Kate's been in many of them. Breaking down Bravo. It is a great, fun time. So would love to have you.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Kate. I love you. I'll talk to you soon.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guest, Dave Quinn, and remind you to click subscribe, leave a 5-star review, join the Facebook group Reality Life with Kate Casey. Follow me on Twitter at Kate Casey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. My Instagram is at Kate Casey, CA. You can find what I'm watching all week long. To get my newsletter with what to watch this week, I mentioned the 4 shows that I had at the top of the show and also some more additions. If you go to katecasey.substack.com, my TikTok is It's Kate Casey, and my Patreon with bonus episodes. You've got to go to this. You got to check it out. You go to Patreon, patreon.com/KateCasey to check out those episodes. You guys, next episode is Heather Gay from Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, and it's a great one too. So I look forward to checking back with you on Friday.
Listen to the 48 Hours podcast for shocking murder cases and compelling real-life dramas from one of television's most watched true crime shows. Go behind the scenes of each episode with award-winning CBS News correspondents and producers in Postmortem, a weekly deep dive. Listen to 48 Hours wherever you get your podcasts.